and welcome to the Negative Pauses Podcast, episode 423. I'm your host, Mike Gutterman, coming to you from the Gutterman Cave, and this is going to be another one of our second edition of one of our roll call episodes. A roll call episode is where we have all the co-captains, all the captains of the USS Negative Positives, send in a audio call-in of kind of what they've been up to or something they've been doing lately. So we're going to start off with Mrs. Roxana Angles, then we'll go out to Kooks and then to Andre, and then I'll finish it up with a segment of my own and wrap the show up. So let's get on out to Roxana Angles and see what she's up to, and she's also got a little interview to give us as well. So let's check out what Roxana has sent in.
Hey, hey, it's Roxana Angles coming to you from, actually today I'm coming to you from Rancho Mirage, California. And I have a very special episode, entrance, segment, whatever you want to call it. Today I have some exciting stuff coming to you from the Coachella Valley. First and foremost, I have a dear friend who just started shooting film not too long ago, and she has started a film therapy photography meetup, and we're going to start meeting up in the desert, different locations, the first Monday of every month. My friend who's putting it together is, her name is Chelsea. Her Instagram is at Chelsea Wildflower, and I'll make sure to tag it in the notes. And another thing, so it was a little bit serendipitous because another dear friend of mine, Nicole from Yucca Valley, which isn't too far, it's like the high desert. She is also starting a photography meetup club, and that one is the Desert Film Club. That's going to be located more in the high desert. So if you know the California, Southern California area, the Coachella Valley and the high desert are relatively close together, probably about, 45 minutes, depending on where you're at. And their first event, which I'm really excited about, is going to be September 16th from 6 to 10 p.m. It's really focusing on experimental abstract photography. And they are partnering up with Milk Thistle. They're going to be doing instant portraits with Polaroids. There's going to be live music. It's going to be amazing. I'm going to tag everybody, Nicole and her husband, and of course Milk Thistle, in the notes as well. So that's all of the new info. Today I have a friend, and we actually just met. It was a crazy way that we even met. It seemed like the universe was just kind of guiding whatever it was that was going to come next with creativity. So my friend Liz Cortez has a really beautiful studio, a yoga studio called Heart and Soul Yoga, and it's in Rancho Mirage, California. It's a very boutique style studio. She does yoga and sound bath and Reiki healing along with art. And not only that, we're also going to, I'm helping with a workshop too. We're gonna talk about it. So we're gonna do some photography. It's really exciting. So I'm actually gonna introduce you. So hey, Liz, how are you doing today?
Hi, I'm doing awesome. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so I am really excited to be interviewing today. The way that we met was serendipitous of sorts. And anyway, I love your yoga studio. I love that you are so artistic. What inspired you to start your yoga studio?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I've been teaching yoga for about 6 years and at different places and just running around from here to there. But I also just have really been longing to have a space of my own. I've been running other people's businesses, and I was ready to just start my own business. So I really wanted this space to just be whatever the hell I wanted to happen. I want to blend all of these fun experiences together. That's why there's just random things that I do here with the sound baths, just mixing like creativity and art. I painted on the wall, the big tree behind us. So if I might like paint randomly on any spots of it, I just really, really wanted a space where just dive in and see what happens, and anything creative and magic will happen here.
I love that about it. And it definitely has that vibe. Like, it's just so welcoming, and it's pretty amazing. So you blend yoga, sound bath, with the arts. So painting, collage soon, photography. So what inspires your creativity?
Yeah, I think I'm really inspired by nature. I'm always inspired by trees, but I'm inspired by just like random stuff too, like magazines, like, but I want to tear them apart and take them and dismantle them and make them into something else. So I'll be just inspired by like a coffee sleeve, or it's just weird. Mm-hmm. So just bringing all that weirdness together is what really inspires me, is to like, just, I don't know, bring it to life in a different way. And
mm-hmm. I know, I love like what you've done. I'm sitting in the studio and I'm around all of this art. If this was a video, I think you'd be a little bit blown away, but there's like murals, and then there's like macrame with feathers, and the choya. And it's just, it has a cool vibe. And Liz, so the part, because you are actually going to start to shoot film, and yes, you're going to be attending our first film therapy meetup. Actually, I think it's called photo therapy. Sorry, I keep on saying film therapy because it's my therapy. But what are you most excited about to start shooting film?
Ooh, I think I'm really excited to actually go into a dark room and process film. Again, we had just talked about it. That's like been on my list of things to do ever since I was younger, and I just didn't take the opportunity to let myself be there. So I'm excited to actually do it and mm-hmm. just get into the raw, like, different stuff and see what I can make and how I can like add that into other art pieces and right. just have something tangible.
I love that. I love that so much, because film is such a, I feel like there's so much artistic, it's like you can just go in so many different directions with it. And it, that actually reminds me, I haven't said anything, but soon, and I'm hoping soon, there's the Create Center out here that really houses a lot of different types of art. They're really working hard into building a community dark room. So if any of you listeners are living close to us, Southern California, and you want your hands in it, DM me, because Deborah, who is spearheading the project for the Create Center, is looking for help. So I'm involved. My friend Nicole is involved. Liz went to the party that kind of kickstarted it. So we're all really excited. So soon, Liz, you're going to be able to have access to a community dark room.
I can't wait. I'm so excited. And I'm excited to meet all the ladies in the therapy group.
Right. Film therapy.
Film therapy. That's so cool. And I'm just really excited about to meet everyone and get inspired by each other.
It's a really, so far, the people coming to the first group are a really, it's a great group of, and it right now, and I don't know if it's going to continue, right now it's primarily female. And, you know, all my listeners, I know a lot of you guys are dudes, and but we're all trying to empower girls to shoot more film, because the more creativity, the more angles we have, different perspective, the stronger our community can grow. So actually, one of the reasons why I also wanted to interview Liz is because she asked me to collab on a special workshop in her studio, which I'm super, super, super excited about. It's going to be coming up the end of September. So, Liz,
yes.
Tell our listeners a little bit about our collaboration workshop.
All right. So, yes, again, I'm so excited to do different funky things like this in this space. It's not just a yoga studio. I like pull it apart and put out tables and easels and like craft stuff and like just so that it can be more than that. So I'm so excited to do this with Roxana because we get to blend all this like cool stuff with her eye, using her photography and her creativity, blending that with my stuff and then sharing that with our community locally here. So what it is, it's a photo collage experience. So we will have paper out, we'll have paints, magazine stuff, anything. We'll have a bunch of dry leaves, feathers, all kinds of unique things to incorporate into your collage piece. And it's also, and then you'll get a photo taken of yourself that will be printed out with a Polaroid. So that will go in. And we're also encouraging people to bring different photos of themselves or their loved ones or their pets or whatever inspires them to incorporate that into the piece. And what it is, it's meditation meets photography meets art. And in itself, it's just going to be extremely meditative, which we all need more of, which will be really cool. And also one thing I was so excited about was we get to do something with our photos rather than just letting them sit in our phones and do nothing with them. Let's like explore actually doing stuff with these like thousands of photos we have in our phones, right? Because what do we do with it? Just sits in the cloud or just like does nothing.
People forget about them. It's like you, I don't know about all you, but it's like we need to be printing our photos more. We have our pooch here, so yeah. If he barks, it's, you know, we're all here.
Yeah. Baxter's hanging out here too. He's part of the experience. So yeah, we're just really excited to bring this piece together to just blend the arts and the elements and then just also to create a little community that comes to this space and can make something fun to take home and to honor themselves afterwards.
I love that. I'm so excited to do the portraits of the people who attend the workshop. I'll be taking, I really like the idea of using black and white Polaroid. I feel like it gives a really dreamy vibe and it's super complimenting on skin tones. So I personally really like black and white. And then using paints and dried flowers, and you all know how I love dried flowers. It's like a big old mixed media party.
Yes,
definitely.
It'll be a fun little party.
So, Liz, our workshop is going to be when? September 28th.
September 28th from 6 to 8:30 p.m.
Yep, so it's really exciting if any of y'all live in the area or if you ever visit out here, I highly suggest that you check out Liz's studio, reach out to her on social media. Liz, where can people find you?
So you can find me on Instagram at Heart and Soul Yoga, but it's S-O-L. So it's soul like the sun. Mm-hmm. So heart and S-O-L yoga. Mm-hmm. So I was inspired by, I'm very fascinated with the sun. Pretty much that's the best way to find me.
Right. And then you'll also, if you follow her page, make sure to ask her about her squirrel.
Oh, yes.
So that's one of my favorites. So, and this is somehow how we connected too, because when I was growing up, my dad saved a squirrel. And we had a pet squirrel and something similar. So what's your squirrel's name?
So his name is Rodolfo. I wanted a very strong name for him, but we call him Rudy. He is a character. He is definitely taking on this huge personality. So a big name is very fitting to him. He's a sassy little thing. He can be a little jerk, but He's awesome. He's so great.
What's his Instagram?
So yeah, his Instagram is Rodolfo_the_rescue_squirrel. I think it's all underscores in between. Rodolfo the rescue squirrel.
We'll put it in the notes nonetheless.
Sorry, I'm like, that's a mouthful.
So Liz, I'm expecting lots of film photos of Rodolfo.
Yeah.
So you guys, I hope everybody is well, and make sure to stay positive
and shoot some cool film photos.
All right, you guys, that's it. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Everybody, Kooks here, the Field Report. I'm coming to you from my place of employment on Sunday morning, September 3rd, 2023. This is a long holiday weekend here. Well, I don't know how long the weekend, if that's, I'm sorry, I know how long it is. We got Monday off, although I realize that a lot of people don't. I feel fortunate that I do. So it's very quiet here at work. And the reason why I'm here is that sometime next year, one of my colleagues is going to retire. He'll have been here for, I think, 21 years by the time that he does retire. And when my colleagues, people in my department or good friends, when they retire, I usually like to make a print for them, you know, obviously analog print, and then frame and mat it, and then have everybody that wants to sign the mat, you know, beforehand. So it's a nice little reminder of the time that they had at work. And, you know, I'm probably pretty happy to have it behind you too, right? I mean, but what I'm getting at is I usually try to get a car that is emblematic of their time here or something they identify with. And so this guy, the car that I chose for him is probably the one he identifies with the most. It was made in between 2004 and 2006, and I think there were only about 1,200 examples made. And we have one that's not a pre-production car, and it's actually a, you know, full-on production model. So that's a big chunk. And funny enough, they had it on some sort of status for a long time, and I think they actually retailed it to a dealer and then bought it back sometime in 2015, 2016. So that there was one model of that car on the sales report that month. So it's kind of funny how that goes. Anyway, this guy, the reason I think that he identifies with this car so much, or would, is he's done all of the technical training on that car since it came out, save for, I think, two classes, which is about 2 weeks worth. I think there was an emergency in his family or something happened and someone else had to fill in for him. But for 20 years, basically, if you had training on that car, it was with this guy. So I can imagine he's got a connection to it. So the thing is, it was not easy to get my hands on it because when he's not using it for training, which these days it's not an often thing, it's maybe once or twice a year, it sits in the museum, and I don't have any way to get to the museum. So I had to do some wrangling and talk to my boss and find some help from some people that had authority, which is not me. So anyhow, this car is sitting in my shop. I plan to put it outside here as soon as I'm done with this field report and take a couple pictures. And I'll tell you, I have been sweating this a lot for the last month or so. When I realized that he was probably going to retire next year, I realized even if it's some in the middle or toward the end of next year, I need to get moving, both in terms of being able to get a picture of this car and develop the film and then make the print and then get everyone to sign it in the different places throughout the country. I have to ship the mat around and stuff like that. So I need some time. And this guy, I don't know why, but he seems to like to come to work a lot. So he'll come to work on Saturday and Sunday when when there's no real good reason to be here, as far as I can imagine. And so I had to pick this weekend because he and his family, I believe, went away, and so he's not here. So, and that's just getting a hold of the car. So the next step I've been really sweating about and thinking about is, you know, how to take the picture of the car, because this car is a very pretty pewter silver metallic. It's one of my favorite colors. It's called GT Silver, and it looks great. But the problem is that color is very close to concrete, and most of the walls and most of the places that I can access on my own are surrounded with concrete. So it's like, crap, how am I going to separate that? But fortunately, there are a few garage doors that are lined up between his shop and the next workshop, and with a couple of human-sized doors in between. So there's four roll-up doors and two human doors in between them. And I think that I can position the car there so I can get a little bit of a darker background. So that's the goal. And the next thing I was thinking about is, do I take the picture from the front or the back? And with this particular car, I don't know that one end of the car is clearly better than the other, except if there is a small edge, I think the front end is a little better because, the car is a naturally aspirated V10 that's mid-engine, so that's behind the driver but in front of the rear wheels. And there are big cutouts in the body down the side to bring air into the radiators, which are right next to the engine. So you don't really see that as much from the back, so I think from the front would be a little better. But I really struggle with that because when I'm thinking about someone retiring, when they can do it on their own terms, when they work for the company a long time, and then they finally are able to plan and retire, you know, something that not all of us get a chance to do it that way. But it's a big moment in their life, and I usually try to, when I do these pictures, I've done a couple of them in the past, I think about it a lot. And I don't try to take a picture from the back of the car looking forward, right? To give them the perspective of the car represents the time at work. And then looking forward down the road is your future and retirement, right? The next step, next chapter in your life. I hope that doesn't sound overly dramatic, but that is how I end up thinking about it. But like I said, from the back, this car isn't, I don't know that it's its best angle. So I think I'm going to shoot it from the front, and maybe I'm just trying to talk myself into it, but this guy in particular is definitely a glory days kind of guy, definitely someone who enjoys looking back. So I suppose looking back at the car, looking at the car at the front, probably wouldn't hurt it that much. So my plan is to shoot it with my Fuji 6x9 camera. It's got a 90mm lens on it, which works out to around 35-40mm in full frame, something like that. I wanted to use that, A, because that's slightly wider than I usually use. Gives you a really big negative, which is going to help with printing. And especially the other thing, which is a whole topic for another day, but the way the image ends up on the negative will make it a lot easier for me to print if I can use that camera. Because my enlarger, you know, if I was to shoot it with a Hasselblad, which I did bring with me, it's my backup camera in case something doesn't work and I need to make an adjustment, or if the camera breaks or something. So I've got that as my backup. But if you look at the roll of, or the, if after you develop the film, if you hang it up on the Hasselblad, the pictures are the left side. If the film is hanging, right, and you have the edges of the film, what you see is that the image is vertical, and then you have the edges on the left and right, the edges of the film to the left and the right. And that can cause problems under the enlarger for me, depending on where the negative is and where the easel is, stuff like that. So the thing is, with the Fuji being 6x9, the image, the top of the image is along one edge of the film and the bottom is along the other, and that just makes it a lot easier to print. So hopefully that camera will work out for me. I'm going to shoot Kodak T-Max 100. I'm going to develop it normally in PyroCat HD. That's a combination that's worked pretty well for me. I brought 5 rolls of that, and I brought 4 rolls of Tri-X 400 as a backup. And I also brought a pack of Polaroid because I don't get to see this car very often or be able to do what I want with it. So that is the plan. And so far right now, having shared this with you, there's nothing different. My anxiety level is still the same as it's been for the last few weeks, only probably higher. Didn't sleep very well last night, which don't know about you, but I never sleep well before I travel or before I've got something big like this planned. I got to go make it happen. So I will follow up with a field report after it's done, and I put the car back in the shop and am ready to head out. Talk to you soon. Everybody, Kooks here with my follow-up field report. I am a tired, sweaty mess. Not that anyone cares. I guess that's evidence of working hard. But I ended up shooting 4 rolls at this car, 2 rolls in the Fuji and 2 in the Hasselblad. Mainly because of the Fuji. Why I had it, when you're wide and really low, it tends to show a lot of space above the car, right? Higher than you might want, and some distracting things. So when I was first shooting, I was like, well, I think let me try the Hasselblad. And I hurried up and loaded the roll in the 6.45 magazine, and I put the 150mm lens on it, which is about 85 in full frame. And the doors, the doors were, there was actually 4 garage doors and 2 human doors. And I was able to contain the car within those doors, which was a goal. And avoid kind of a nasty pothole. But one of the big challenges was the reflections on the car, trying to get reflections on the car that were not off-putting. You know, try to highlight the lines of the car. Above the garage doors is a number, like a bay number, and I noticed pretty early that there was a big square shining reflected on the hood. It's a big kind of blotch, and even at 11 by 14 on the print, you probably still wouldn't be able to see it super clearly. So I expected this, and I brought my polarizer and used that, and that was one of the reasons why I felt like I needed to use the Hasselblad as well, because it's a through the lens camera, and you can see the results of a polarizer as you're turning it. Of course, you got to pull it off and meter through it and then put it back on where it was, but at least you can still, before you pull the trigger on the shutter, you can see exactly where it was. With a Fuji being a rangefinder, that's a lot more difficult. You end up having to take the polarizer off, hold it up in front of your eye, and turn it to the right orientation to give you what you're looking for, and then try to index that in your head and then be able to screw it back onto the camera and get it in the same place and hope like heck that you got it in the right spot. So I ended up shooting 4 rolls altogether. In the Fuji, I took 2 exposures of each composition. And in the Hasselblad, I took 4 exposures of each composition, just to be sure that I would have, if there was any defects possibly, or a piece of dirt or something like that, that I wanted to have more than one example to work from. And if I do end up printing from the 6.45 negative, I mentioned earlier the trouble with getting it into full frame into the enlarger. I backed off slightly, so I think I've got room if I need it. But if I have to, I'll just slice one of those 4 negatives of each, you know, composition off and put that in the enlarger by itself. And that means I could turn it sideways and there would be an air gap all the way around it. So I would be able to print that completely full frame if I wanted to. So, and I will tell you, driving this car that has a V10 engine and a floor mounted clutch, and which is not meant to be feathered very much around metal doorways and lifts, it was a little scary. Very wide car. Very expensive, but I'm happy to say I got it back in one piece and everything's good. So I'm going to drive home and take a shower and probably take a nap. Then later on, I'm going to be doing some developing. So thank you for listening. I hope you enjoy the podcast. And if you want to know anything more about this or had any recommendations or any advice to share, you know, going forward, I'd be more than happy to have it, because I certainly don't think I know everything. Everything's a learning. Every time I lift my camera up, it's a learning process. So anyway, thank you for listening.
Howdy folks, this is Andre reporting from sunny Southern California, Los Angeles, North Hollywood to be specific. I wanted to record a quick little bit of audio here tonight because this evening I got a chance to play around a little bit more with my bin stacks. And if you're not familiar with the bin stacks, it is a Fujifilm Instax square back for the Mamiya RB67 made by Han Chen, I believe HAAN.CHEN on Instagram. Attaches onto the back of the Mamiya RB67. You do have to remove the rotating back, but in doing so, it's actually not too difficult to remove the rotating film back and put on the Instax square back, and allows you to shoot the wonderful, high quality, pretty darn consistent Instax square format. I got this several months ago. I think I'd only put maybe a couple of packs of film through it, so more or less, you know, 20 shots. I did actually rent it out to someone as well during that time, so it's probably seen maybe like 60 shots through it. But overall, you know, it works pretty darn well. It's a combination of a cannibalized Instax square camera, some 3D printed components, some, you know, custom metal machine components. And I had sort of set it aside and hadn't used it for quite a while, particularly because the fact that the Instax emulsion is ISO 800. And here in Los Angeles, we are burdened by the heavy, heavy, toll of extreme amounts of sunshine for 99% of the year. And with a camera like the RB67, ISO 800 is a pretty big thing to overcome during the day. The maximum shutter speed on the majority, if not all, of those Mamiya leaf shutter lenses is 1/400th of a second. And at least the lens that I tend to use the most has a maximum aperture of f3.8 or 3.5, something along those lines. Let's just say f4. So it can be kind of tough to get shallow depth of field portraits out on a bright sunny day. And one of the things that I had sort of made a little mental note to pick up at some point was a variable ND filter. And that's just, you know, a screw-on filter that you screw onto the front of the lens that has a kind of a rotating piece to it that the front sort of rotates. Very similar actually to a circular polarizing filter, if you guys have any experience with that. And it probably uses something kind of very similar, a crisscrossing of polarized lenses to produce kind of like a gradient of density, you know, blocking some light, getting lighter or darker in order to block a certain amount of light. Doing a little bit of math to figure out how many stops I needed to get to kind of comfortably shoot that lens wide open within the maximum shutter speed of the leaf shutter lenses. I think I came out to, you know, the sort of sweet spot would be something that could get to at least 6 stops of neutral density. So I ended up picking up a relatively inexpensive one for $30 by K&F Concepts, I believe, on B&H, 77mm variable neutral density filter by K&F Concepts for approximately $29.99 before taxes and shipping and all that jazz. So overall, not a huge investment to make in order to see if this simple little product could help me shoot that Binstax Instax Square back a little bit more often. So if the dots haven't been connected, or if I haven't explained it well, sufficiently well enough, the idea behind using a variable ND filter is that I could leave it attached to the lens, so I wouldn't have to be kind of taking it on or off or screwing it on or off, and focus, since it's an SLR, right? You're focusing at the maximum aperture with, you know, with the lens wide open. Focus with the variable ND filter set to the minimum amount of neutral density to let the maximum amount of light come in. Lock in my focus. There's a little focus lock lever near the focus knobs on the left-hand side of the camera. And before I take my picture, rotate the variable ND filter into, you know, whatever amount that I needed, if it was something like 6 stops, for example, in order to be able to shoot at something like f4 and 1/25th of a second, just to give an example. So I ended up doing that over... I didn't actually take any specific shots. By the time I got to the neighborhood bar where my friend works, the light had already kind of dipped low enough to where I could get a shot off at more or less those settings just without using the filter at all. But tomorrow I'm going to be using the filter, specifically trying to get some shallow depth of field portraits, like in the middle of the day, high noon. And I'm excited to see how that goes. I'll report back, similar to kind of how I did a little post-mortem of the 4x5 shoot. I'll record another little one of these tomorrow evening. But excited to have gotten that variable ND filter in, and popped off a couple of shots this evening without the filter, just to sort of re-familiarize myself with how to attach the back onto the camera, focusing with it, cranking the little hand crank of the Binstax back and waiting for it to develop. I did post the picture that I took today at Hop Merchants on my Instagram, my personal Instagram, the kind of just fun, not that taking things serious, personal account, which is andre.snapshots. So you can take a peek at that. The one that's next, the shot that I posted that has the RB67 in the frame and the beer, is the first shot that I took, and you'll notice that where I photographed my friend Matt, the highlights kind of blew out a little bit and his shirt was black, so I probably overexposed it by maybe a stop. Just something to, you know, consider for next time. Err on this a little bit on the side of underexposure, because once you lose those highlights with Instax, you really lose them. Whereas deep dark inky blacks, I mean, the maximum would it be the D-max or the D-min on a positive instant film format? I guess it would be D-min? No, D-max, whatever. But the darkest dark that you can get is pretty dark. I actually accidentally ejected the last frame from the previous pack of film that was in there, and it's pretty dark. So that does tell me that you are able to get some pretty dark shadows. So I think that next time, you know, when in doubt, I'm probably gonna err a little bit on the side of underexposure, just to make sure that I don't blow out my highlights. And if my deepest, darkest shadows in the frame, you know, go completely black, that's a-okay with me. So don't know how entertaining or educational this may or may not be, but it was just cool to shoot something a little different this evening, and I look forward to doing a few more tests tomorrow in the sunshine, and see if that process of kind of having my composed and focused shot in the viewfinder, darkening that up a ton by turning the variable ND filter right before hitting the shutter button, is super annoying or not. Time will tell. But just wanted to share that. And I will pop back on for you guys here in a few seconds, but for me in approximately 24 hours, to the postmortem of the outdoors variable ND portrait test. So I'll see you in a few seconds. Howdy folks, this is Andre reporting from the future, or the past, or the slightly advanced in chronological order from the previous recording. I did go ahead and do my little photo walk test with the Binstax back for the RB67, and it went okay. The variable ND filter that I had purchased seems to be a little iffy. It's my understanding that it kind of works similar to a circular polarizing filter, where you probably have, you know, a crisscrossing of polarized lenses that as you turn that front portion, you know, overlap in such a way that block light, you know, creating a variable amount of density. I can't quite remember off the top of my head if I had mentioned in the previous segment, but I pretty much just put it on top of an LED, you know, digital camera scanning light source, and was trying to take spot meter readings off of it at the different kind of levels. It does have these sort of kind of like an index, and then several little dots going from minimum and then all the way out to maximum. I tried to kind of, you know, essentially create a scale for that to see how much light it was blocking, to figure out like, okay, at dot number 11, position number 11, it looks like it's, you know, blocking 6 stops, for example. So I created that sort of rough guide to guide myself, and went off trying to take some pictures, and I would say that my success rate was maybe about 50%. In some cases, I think partially because of that polarizing effect, there were certain angles of sort of the sun behind me or whatever that would cause the sky to go super duper dark. Even though, you know, sort of upper midtones and into the highlights of my image that looked white came out, you know, nice and bright white, whereas the sky behind it, you know, not as bright but still definitely a very bright blue color, came out almost jet black. So there's definitely something going on there. In some of the other shots, I did notice a bit of a color shift in comparison to what I saw with my eyes. And last but not least, I did have some flaring, which I was able to tame down a bit by using the kind of pop-out rubber lens hood that fits, you know, most if not all of those Mamiya RB67 lenses. So, you know, I'm not 100% certain kind of what all this means. Does this mean that, you know, any variable ND filter is going to exhibit these issues? Or is it just because I bought a cheaper one? To give you an idea of sort of the price difference, the $30 one that I bought from K&F Concepts on B&H was by far the cheapest. The next step up was something around like 120, and they went up to about 200 in terms of price. So, you know, could I potentially pick up a more expensive one? Sure, but I'm not gonna be doing that, you know, immediately, to be honest with y'all. Definitely want to kind of play around with this one a little bit more and see if I can find a pattern of when, you know, to do certain things. And also just learn a little bit more about the Instax emulsion, what its strengths and limitations are. I'm still trying to figure that out. There were some shots that certain parts of it just came out a little bit darker. Again, I'm not sure if that's the potential polarizing effect or just me metering it incorrectly. We'll see. But yeah, overall, the actual process of using it in conjunction with focusing quote unquote wide open, I mean the aperture is always wide open, but at the minimal amount of variable neutral density, and then turning it down to the position that I wanted to, was actually not that bad. It doesn't have hard stops at either end, and so I ended up just kind of using a knife to sort of scratch in a reference point, because depending on what lens I had this variable ND filter screwed onto, and if I had it on the lens and then the hood attached, which screws on via the filter thread, or the opposite, so lens, hood, and then filter, I kind of played around with you know, figuring out what was best in terms of being able to actually access the rotating ring, and still seeing kind of the markings and everything. I ended up making several kind of little scratch marks on the black anodizing of the probably aluminum filter ring, and it wasn't too bad, you know, in terms of focusing and then rotating that down into the amount of ND that I wanted. So overall, I haven't completely given up on this as a method. I will be using the next pack of 10 that I have to continue doing some more tests, but overall, you know, I'm somewhat decently happy with it. I'll experiment, I guess, at some point with maybe just holding a fixed neutral density filter onto the front of the lens, not like fully screwing it down, hopefully just kind of putting the threads in contact with each other blocks, you know, any light from kind of coming in through the gap between the filter and the lens enough to where I wouldn't have any crazy flaring, but not have to deal with this unintentional polarizing effect. If anybody has any experience with circular, you know, screw-on type variable ND filters, whether you're a videographer that uses them or anything like that, let me know if you have any tips or tricks on kind of avoiding the pitfalls of that polarizing, or what I'm theorizing to be a polarizing effect. I could totally be off on this. But if I have time over the next few weeks to, you know, do another little outing with this, I will. But if not, myself and Mr. Mike Kukavica are going to be heading to Las Vegas, actually, on, let me pull up my calendar here, the weekend of the 15th through 17th. We're hoping to see if we can meet up with none other than Mr. Ted Vieira. And Mike, I'll ask you to put in a classic Ted Vieira soundbite here. Yep. I hope I get to hear that in person. even if we don't end up, you know, being able to meet up with Ted. I believe that he's going to be joining us on the podcast the following Monday, so that should be a ton of fun. And one of the cameras that I will be bringing to sort of match, I just like shooting it, but to match the more sort of slow, methodical, tripod-based photography that Mr. Kukovica tends to do with his Hasselblad will be my RB67. So having the ability to kind of set up the shot and change between my 6.45 back, my 6x6 back, 6x7 back, and the Instax square back should be, you know, a good amount of fun. And I'll probably end up doing some additional tests there with the variable ND filter. But yeah, this isn't the end of this experiment. It's really just the beginning, and I hope to kind of keep you guys posted as I continue to play around with it. I think next up is probably going to be picking up a prism finder and probably a fixed 4-6 stop, you know, fixed neutral density filter, and trying out that whole process again. One of the things I love doing with instant film is portraits, and being 5'4" and using a waist level finder doesn't exactly make for the most attractive angles for portraiture, hence my using of a prism finder on my Rolleiflex. So I know that the prism finders for the RBs are particularly heavy. It's quite a bit of glass. Just have to hit the gym a little more to make sure that I can handhold that at reasonable speeds without shaking the camera. But yeah, maybe the combination of a prism finder and a fixed ND filter that I can just, you know, hold in front of the lens right before I take the picture could be the ticket. But I will keep you guys posted, and I'll take a picture of some of these Instax square prints and post them to the Facebook group. All right, thanks so much, guys. I appreciate you joining me on this little field report and postmortem as part of our roll call episode, and I'll talk to you guys soon. Take care.
Folks, we're back here for the final segment, and we're going to finish with me. You get me last. I put me last because, you know, you can just tune out this section, I guess. And you want to hear actual good content, you listen to the other three co-hosts, and then you get me last, and you're like, all right, it's just Gutterman. I can just skip this part and just you know, go on to the next podcast. So, but one thing I wanted to talk about is I spent a lot of this weekend watching some television, and I honestly, I kind of hate watching television. I would much rather watch YouTube. I'm sort of addicted to YouTube, and because I'd rather watch content that is in my interests, my passions, like photography and music gear and photography gear. I'd honestly rather watch YouTube channels about that kind of stuff than watch the really horrible 80s movies that I watched over this weekend here, this Labor Day weekend, which, by the way, if you're enjoying the Labor Day holiday, if you have Monday off, thank a union worker, union, yes, this is a, Labor Day is sort of a appreciation of the labor movement, and I am, as a union worker, I'm very proud to be part of a union. So, and so if you know a union worker, give them a hug. Maybe give them a kiss. I mean, if it's appropriate. But so I did watch a lot of horrible 80s movies. It's sort of a guilty pleasure. I mean, horrible 80s movies are great and all. But one thing I've noticed is I have this issue right now. And I come home from work or whatever, and the first thing I do is I come out here to the cave, crack open a code Miller Lite, you know, crack open a can of Suds, and I immediately catch up on all the YouTube channels that I'm subscribed to. And unfortunately, I'm subscribed to a whole lot of them because being into music as a musician and also being into photography, boy, if you're lacking YouTube channels, but you're into music and photography, there's a ton of YouTube channels out there, and there's a ton of gear, and so it can be a real downward spiral into a YouTube rabbit hole if you don't watch out. And one night I got off work a little early this week from the Ford Motor Company. I was like, oh man, I'm gonna go home and I've got plenty of time. I'm gonna plug in a guitar and some pedals, and I'm just gonna write a song. I'm gonna write a song that make the young girls cry, you know. And but instead, I got home and I opened up my YouTube subscriptions and started watching YouTube for about 2-3 hours. And then after about 2-3 hours of this and going down rabbit holes and checking out other videos and all this stuff, I realized I didn't get anything accomplished tonight. And I'm not really that mad about it. I think consuming content can motivate you to be creative, can motivate your creative outlets, but too much of it can be a bad thing. So I'm in the situation where my pendulum has swung. I always talk about my pendulum swinging between interest in playing music and interest in shooting photography. Lately, my pendulum has swinging into watching way too much YouTube and not consuming content rather than creating content. And I think there's a balance that needs to be struck. So I'm finding that why I can be inspired by watching all these YouTube channels, and it does inspire me. And like, I love checking out all the people in the community. They have YouTube channels. I still listen to a ton of podcasts, film podcasts in the community, but podcasts don't bother me as bad because I can listen to those when I'm on the car. Sometimes when I'm on the line at Ford, I can listen to them. I can listen to a podcast when I'm in the shower. I'm accomplishing other things while I listen to a podcast, but YouTube is sort of, you're kind of absorbed. You're in it. You're in it to win it, I guess. You're not really creating anything, or you can't accomplish any other thing in life while you're watching a YouTube video. And so I'm having a real difficulty of just consuming too much creative content rather than creating my own creative content. And it's just something that I need to rectify. I just wonder if anybody else kind of has that situation. Now, granted, there's times, man, you know, like you come home from work, it's been a long day, you're not feeling creative. And so maybe the best thing to do in that situation is to just consume other people's creations and hopefully get inspired for the next time you can create. But when, like the other night, I had plenty of time. I wasn't tired because I got off from work supremely early, and it was a good night at Ford. I got off early and I had plenty of energy still left in me. But then I wasted so much time consuming others' content and not creating my own creations, I guess. So actually that night I got kind of so angry with myself. I have this old mouse pad that sits here at the Gutterman Cave Negative Positive Command Center. This mouse pad that sits here on the desk here I can't tell you how many beers have been spilled on it over the years, but it's been here for a long time. It's like discolored. It has stains. It's got like wear patches. So I finally just, Mike, you need to almost put a little, kick yourself in the butt. So I literally took a Sharpie and wrote really big on the top of the mouse pad, create !! Then I also put one of my favorite quotes. I don't even know who did this quote, but it's I don't even know if it's an actual quote, but it's sort of a philosophy that I believe is very important in your creations. Is just limitations breeds creativity. And so I wrote that on this mouse pad as well, here in big black Sharpie ink on my mouse pad, that my beer stained mouse pad, to try to remind me that, hey man, it's great to consume other people's content. It's great to be inspired by it. But Mike, you know, you only live once, right? YOLO, they say, and you gotta start creating things, man. And just a little conundrum that I've run into in the last couple of weeks, I think, or maybe a couple months, actually, this has been kind of building in me. And I find that it's a lot easier to just sit here and enjoy some YouTube channels, which nothing wrong with that. I actually think it's can be a very inspiring and a very educational thing. But when it starts interfering with taken away time from you creating your own art or passions or pursuing your own passions. I think that's where we run into a problem. So that's my talk for tonight. I know it's not as educational as the previous co-captains just gave out there. It's more me laying on the psychiatrist chair and telling my woes to you all and see if anybody is going through the same thing I'm going through. But then again, I'd much rather watch YouTube than horrible 80s movies. I guess there's a little something to gain from that. So so anyway, I want to wrap this one up. Thanks to Kooks, Andre, and Roxana for submitting fine entries into this roll call episode. Let us know what you think about these roll call episodes. It's something that that's a little easier for us to do than all get together and try to do a proper episode. I will say we have a couple of great guests line up, one that has never been on the show and one who has been on the show, and that we're really super excited about. And about that, all I'll say is, yeah, man. So yeah, got a couple good guests coming up. So hopefully that gives you a clue at least who one of them is. All right, folks, take care. We will talk to you soon. And until we do talk to you, everybody, have a great week or couple weeks for whenever we come back. We'll see you soon.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. We really appreciate your time and your mental energy in listening to us. If you'd like to talk to me or if you'd like to take a look at my work, you can find me on Instagram at The Drunk Dark Room.
I'm Roxana Angles, and you can find my photography on Instagram at RoxanaLog or my shadow account, Galanixor.
This is Andre Dominguez. You can see my photography at Andre on Film, periods in between. The more kind of personal, less artsy, fartsy stuff is at Andre.snapshots.
I'm Mike Gutterman, and you can see my photography on Instagram at GuttermanPhoto. You can email this program at negpositives@gmail.com. That's negpositives@gmail.com. You can join our Facebook group, the Negative Positives Film Photo Podcast Facebook group. We also have an Instagram account under the account name Negative Positives. If you submit photos to Instagram, think about using the hashtag Negative Positives. You can support this program on Ko-fi. That is ko-fi.com/negativepositives. You can get my music on Bandcamp. That is mikegutterman.bandcamp.com. Everybody stay positive and shoot some cool film photos. A Gutterman Cave production!